Juan Soto signed with the New York Mets mere seconds before we started recording this podcast. How convenient. On this episode of Baseball Barbercast, we react to Juan Soto agreeing to a very large contract with the New York Mets of Major League Baseball. That and a little bit more on this episode of Baseball Barbercast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbercast, the only baseball podcast in the world that doesn't know where Juan Soto has signed. I'm Jake Mintz. I know that's Jordan Schusterman, and he doesn't know. Here's the context. We were about to record a podcast tonight, December 8th. Jordan logged on, got onto the chat, news broke on the phone where Juan Soto is signing. In the millisecond where Jordan Schusterman was not on his phone, and so we said, Jordan, do not look it up. We will reveal it on the podcast, and I'm going to do so right now. This is via John Heyman.
Wait, before you say that, because I figured it would be from our good friend John Heyman, I can't believe that this is how this has happened. Again, we've been talking all day. I literally walked into my hotel room. We wanted to record as soon as I got to Dallas, but we were like, oh, is this seriously? Do we really not know where Juan Soto is signing by the time I get here? When we last left the podcast last week, we said, well, surely we will have the answer by the time we get here. And when I sat down in this chair, I was like, man, we're just going to talk about Clay Holmes? Really? That's it? But you have the news for me. So Jake, lay it on me. Give me them dollars. Give me them hundreds of millions and what team Juan Soto will be playing for the next how many years?
It is currently 9:15 p.m. Central Time. At 9:10 p.m. Central Time, John Heyman tweeted, breaking, Juan Soto to the Mets, $765 million, 15 years.
Oh, okay. Did he go all caps with the breaking?
No.
Wow. If he's not using it then, I mean, whew. That is a large number, Jake Mintz. That's a large number. Now, I got to say, like, this is kind of what, like, I mean, for, I don't know how many, the last however many years, like, this was kind of the tweet we were waiting for. But now that it is real, now that Juan Soto is going to go to the Mets for well over $700 million, let's rewind a year ago. Shohei Ohtani gets $700 million. I assume we're still in the early stages of finding out the structure of said contract for Juan Soto. But if we assume that he's not deferring 98% of it, this is a whole of a hell of a lot more money than Shohei Ohtani. So let's start. Do you want to start with the team or do you want to start with the dollars? Because I have a lot of thoughts on both. For also, it's nice to see you. I'm excited to hang out IRL in a little bit.
The dollars and the team are connected.
Yeah, they sure are.
They sure are. And that's where I'd like to begin. What we have here is the owner of the Mets, Steve Cohen, who, according to the Google machine, is worth 21.3 billion big boys, spending more money to get the thing he wants than Hal Steinbrenner, owner of the Yankees. That is it. It is that simple. Really, is Juan Soto, quote unquote, worth this much money? No, he's not. He's not. No player really is worth this. But it doesn't matter. The money is only as important as what it allows or restricts you from doing. And for Steve Cohen, a top 100 rich person on the planet, this is a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. And while the Mets are not the only team that has blasted into the luxury tax, they do occupy their own space in not caring about the repercussions, your draft pick is this amount lower, you have this amount of international bonus money less to spend, oh, you have to pay X dollars on top of X dollars on top of X dollars. They are operating in a different space. And that was the whole point of Steve Cohen, Mets fan, buying the Mets, and treating this like what we all fantasize about what we would do if we had infinite money and could just get our favorite players on our favorite teams on a whim. Now, at the same time, this is a hell of a price to end up at, right? And I think that I want to get into that because while it is not surprising that the Mets ended up with the highest bid and ultimately outlasted however many other teams that thought they could hang in there and make something, you know, a real competitive run at it. And of course, we're in the earliest possible stages of discussing how close, what the offers were for all these, from all these other teams, from the Yankees, from the Red Sox, from the Blue, oh, were the Blue Jays going to match it? Oh, what were the Dodgers offering? Whatever. But this is a staggering number. At the same time, the first thing that everyone's going to say, and we already got parts of this over the last few days, how could Soto get more than Ohtani? How is this possible? And I think that is an important thing to get at here, because this is fundamentally different than what we did a year ago. Yet, because here's what I believe. If we had all the teams, all these same teams involved in Ohtani, Shohei Ohtani could have gotten this exact amount of money in real dollars from the Los Angeles Dodgers if he and his agency and all those things wanted to push it to that level, because they all knew there was no level that they couldn't get to. But that was not how they decided to handle that. They got it to a $700 million number. He wanted to go to the Dodgers, and the deal was done.
And that's how we get to this number, and this is what's important to understand. If the New York Mets were still owned by the old ownership group, and that group wasn't willing, obviously, to spend this amount of money on Juan Soto, Soto would have signed with the New York Yankees for like $640 million last week, right? But because of the Mets being owned by Steve Cohen, who has endless money, that number kept going higher, I would imagine, because this just turned into a pissing contest between these two incredibly rich individuals. And so that is why this number, I don't want to say it's inflated, but it rose significantly just because of the dynamic. And it is a reminder that that is what the market is. When we talk about the market, it is dependent on time and place and the factors of how these teams are operating in a given space and time. Ohtani didn't want to go to the Mets or the Yankees, and so they weren't involved. And so that number didn't get to this level, right?
It didn't need to. Yeah. And also, as we know, Shohei wasn't looking to get that all on his account as soon as possible. Now, listen, that's not to say that Juan Soto is X amount more greedy or needed the money, whatever. It's not about that. But because of the circumstance of both the player and being a free agent younger than, you know, normally, of being one of the best hitters on earth, maybe the best hitter on earth, of having all of the team, all of the richest teams competing for this one guy, I mean, it's cliche because we've heard it so much over the last 3 years, you know, as we started to anticipate Juan Soto in the open market. I mean, it was a perfect storm more than it was for Ohtani, right? And Ohtani also had like it was a different circumstance. And so that's how you get there. To me, it's actually not that complicated or even surprising that it ended up over $700 million, because it's not just that the biggest markets were involved, it's also the teams and how desperate they were to get this guy. I mean, the Yankees, again, there are other situations where you can imagine the Yankees sooner tapping out and being like, eh, we're not going to get there. So Jordan, we have an update.
Via John Heyman, Yankees bid $760 for 16 years.
So this brings us to the next part of the conversation, which is when we considered that the Mets were going to end up having the high bid, I think no one, even Yankees fans, were probably going to admit that was probably going to end up being the case, right? But now we are going to bring up another part of the discourse, which will soon happen as we eventually have a Juan Soto Mets press conference, which is, what did this guy want? Right? Because there's a big difference between $5 million. That's not a small amount of money. Now, it is in the context of this, right? AAV, whatever. People, when they see this and you say, oh my God, if they were roughly the same offers, he just wanted to be a Met. And this is where we are going to find out about what Juan Soto wanted. And I don't feel comfortable declaring that. Maybe these offers were, because we've had situations like Robinson Cano, right? the Mariners were so far ahead of all the other offers, where at those point you throw your hands up. We might have a situation here where that wasn't the case, in which case the next steps of hearing from Juan Soto is, I think, at least a little bit compelling.
Let's pivot to the teams.
Yes.
The New York Mets went to the NLCS this past season without Juan Soto. Now they have Juan Soto.
Nice. Love that. Love having Juan Soto on your team. I think
love that for them.
That's big. That's big. I got to say, I still have some questions about this Mets roster. Some fewer questions.
I actually want to call time out again on this. Yeah, they have Juan Soto. And when you are at Christmas and people are like, he's not worth it. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It does not matter. The money is irrelevant. It is peanuts. It is candy. It is Monopoly money. It doesn't exist in this context because the Mets have already spent a relatively significant amount of money this winter on two other free agent pitchers. And so they are going to continue to spend. So adding Juan Soto is just Juan Soto showing up. It is not the contract, at least to me.
I would assume. I mean, again, there's still a lot more innings that they are going to have to replace. There are more pitches they're going to have to add. There's still part of their position player group that is at least moderately questionable. And that's where you can have a real conversation. And you can say, oh my God, you got Juan Soto. That's awesome. He's one of the best players in the world. Are they the best team in the National League now? No, not even close, right? And that's fine too. They turned out to be a lot better, but there's still a lot more building to go. And I think that's what's compelling as we, you know, evaluate them as a team. But again, we talk about the value of Soto. You talk about the floor that he raises your entire offense, let alone the ceiling. There's just so much comfort in that. Oh my gosh.
One more point, and then we're going to take a break. Mets fans, you deserved this. You waited and waded through years of muck, of ownership malfeasance, of a lack of investment, of the person running your baseball team being not willing to pump money into it to be successful. And that must have been frustrating. And the utter disorganization of what the Mets used to be. And I will linger on that. What the Mets used to be. Because this moment is more than having a really good right fielder on your team, right? It is about sticking it to the Yankees. It is about one-upping the team across town. It is proving yourself to the baseball world that you are no longer a punchline. And I think that is not worth $760 million, but it's still pretty damn cool. And so for me, in the wake of this 26 minutes after it's happened, my brain is going to the Mets fans that I know who love this team, who care about this team, who have watched this team bumble around with a blindfold on, doing things that were, quote, Mets as an adjective. They were Metsing as a verb. And to see them atop this must be so gratifying. Now, they'll have to adjust to being the villain. If the Dodgers are the Yankees, then the Mets are the Dodgers. That makes sense. But Mets fans, pop open a bottle tonight. Because this is just beyond your wildest dreams.
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because it does seem to signal a new era of the Mets. And let's remember, at the winter meetings 2 years ago, or just 2 winters ago, they spent a boatload of money and it went nowhere. And they blew it up and they traded Justin Verlander at the deadline and none of it worked, right? But it was all leading up to this because this was the time to have the richest owner in baseball more than any other time in baseball history. And they made it happen. And that's the other thing. This opportunity, this free agent was not coming around again anytime soon. You could look ahead. Oh, Vlad, they could have tried Vlad Jr. next year. Oh, they could have. No. This was the one time. This was the time when Steve Cohen was going to say, whatever it takes. And that appears to be the situation. Let's take a quick break, Jake Mintz. And when we return, a few more details starting to come out about this contract. And then maybe we'll talk about some other moves.
And the Yankees. Oh. And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. Juan Soto is a Met. We are a shocked. And the Yankees are in a shambles.
They are right now. And what happens next is going to be pretty interesting. Now, before we get to the fallout the other teams.
Doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what happens next. In some respects, it does not, like, from a team building perspective and winning a World Series. Yes, if the Yankees win a World Series next year and the Mets don't make the playoffs, what happens over this offseason to ensure that outcome matters.
Yeah.
But what doesn't matter is that the roles have reversed. That is indisputable, because for the entire history of New York baseball, the Yankees have been the top spending dog, right? Under the Steinbrenners, it has been money talks. For our whole childhood and way before that, if the Yankees went into free agent, usually they just paid for it and they got it, right? And that is no longer the case. Yes, they are still a financial juggernaut relatively in the league, but they got outbid here. They got outbid, something that does not happen to the Yankees. And why is that the case? Because Hal Steinbrenner has less money than Steve Cohen. And I think that, look,
yeah,
that reality that the Yankees are no longer the untouchable financial behemoth of the sport, that is something significant, worth really digging into and thinking about and reckoning with, something that Yankees fans are probably, that is, I think, the most shaking thing. Because you can replace the value with four other free agents, you could get to the WAR calculations, but it is the emotional blow of just being beaten by the Mets, who are in Queens,
for a guy that you know, you felt like you felt like the Yankees recently, whether it was Cole or Judge, it's like, if we want him, we're gonna make it happen. And let's be clear, 760 over 16 is a pretty good offer.
Good offer. I'd take it. I
mean, if they had coming in at 650 and throwing their hands up, you know, fine. But that is why, as I sort of hinted at earlier, it is interesting that maybe it was always as simple as going for the highest bid. And it is a big difference when you're at that amount of years and that amount of dollars. I mean, we're talking about, right, $51 million AAV is kind of where it comes in at. A couple other details that we've got so far. Opt out after year five. Now, this one is funny because, one, that would allow him to hit free agency at a normal age. Sure, should he desire to no longer
be
on the
31.
Mets. 30. He'd be entering his age 31 season, which, again, is pretty good. Actually, still probably technically younger than the average free agent, which is great. You said right before we started recording again. I mean, how good would he have to be to opt out of that? Because he, at that point, he's opting out of, I should have done the math before I did this, but he'd be opting out of 10 years and 500 million. I mean, I don't know. But here's the wild part. Maybe he is about to get better. I don't know. I mean, this is the why you're signing Juan Soto for all this money at age 26. Maybe his best years are still ahead of him. Now, would that make sense still for him to opt out? I don't know. 5 years from now, my gosh, we were trying to think about 2 years from now as impossible. So that's a goofy conversation. But there is something funny to have that little thing in there. But more importantly, Jake, no deferrals.
I want it now.
It's my money and I need it now. $75 million signing bonus. Oh, that's just sprinkle that in real quick. That's going to be more than almost any free agent sign. How many free agent deal totals will be bigger than $75 million this winter? Not that many. And he's just getting that as a little, nice little welcome to the squad bonus.
Thanks for coming out. Here's the 75 fat ones. Oh, yeah. This is the Veruca Salt strategy.
Daddy, I want it now.
No deferrals is also kind of a great flex too for pretty so much everybody funny. Involved, right? Cohen's like, yeah, no problem. I got you. 51 a year. You can have it all. That's not an issue for me.
Would you like it in cash?
Yeah. How would you? Would you like it in, you know, Starbucks gift cards? I mean, who's to say? This is an amount of money that, again, we are not really used to analyzing, but that's the fun of it. And I know we said this last year with Ohtani, like, oh, when are we going to see this again? Well, okay, we immediately saw it again. Maybe we're naive to think we'll never see anything like this again for another however many years, but it sure does kind of feel like it. I mean, it's hard to imagine with there are a lot of talented players in the league right now that will hit free agency at young ages, whatever. Oh, man, this really does feel like a very important moment in sports business history.
So where do the Yankees go from here?
Yep.
Well, they dig into a pint of Ben & Jerry's ice cream. They crack open a fine bottle of scotch, and they wallow in their defeat for the evening. And then tomorrow they wake up and they fight for another day. Just make your team better. Just make your team better. How do they make their team better? Christian Walker or Pete Alonso needs to be a New York Yankee. That's the first thing, right? Replacing Soto in the lineup is impossible because he was the only other good hitter for large swaths of the season that you now just need to build a good lineup in the entirety. Right?
Like, yeah. I mean, listen, all the jokes about recreating him in the aggregate, like, bring him on, right? Which is hilarious for the Yankees. Making Moneyball jokes about the Yankees is very funny. I think what's compelling now is you could see Yankees fans already doing this a month ago. Oh, if we're willing to spend this on Soto, well, if we spread it around, okay, that's great. If we know they were willing to spend $760 on Soto, are they willing to spend $760 million in free agency from now until opening day? I'll believe that when I see it. Now, there is a path to that, although it would, I mean, based on the projected contracts, that would involve probably four or five more free agents. But you go Burns, you go Pete, you go whatever. I mean, getting to 760 is tough, which makes me think they have to do something like that. They have to continue to play at the top of the market. They have to find ways, because by the way, not only is Juan Soto so far and away the best hitter, but the impact in terms of still in the free agent market is really a guy like Burns. Now, not that they don't need pitching, but that's an interesting thing where it's like there's no offensive impact to the same degree. We've seen rumors about Teoscar. We've seen rumors about Pete, right? Christian Walker. A lot of these hitters we haven't even talked about yet because that part of the market just hasn't been developed yet. But the thing is, do I think they're going to now spend $700 million on the rest of free agency? No, I don't. But I do think that they're going to have to be just as aggressive as we've seen them really at all in recent seasons to get back to a point where you're still feeling really good about the roster, because that is what Soto really afforded them, as we saw for large portions of that season. And even though they are still a very expensive, talented team in other parts of the roster, it was still pretty top heavy by the end.
Man.
The Yankees. I mean, like, there's parts of that roster. And again, too, this is the other thing. Okay, how do the Mets keep pushing? Or do they still play at the top two, or do they fill out the rest? I mean, I haven't even started, you know, messing around with the roster resource and really seeing what other parts they absolutely have to fill in. We know they had a ton of innings going out the door. But again, let's stick on the Yankees here for one more second, and then we should probably talk about the Red Sox. Probably talk about the Blue Jays at least a little bit. But give me your last thoughts on the Yankees. I know the general sentiment is they have to go big. They have to bring in multiple. Obviously, you're going to have to bring in multiple hitters to come close to replacing Soto in some form. How much does this really damage? It's too early to say this, but I mean, regardless of what they can do, I mean, does this make you feel a lot worse about their team?
Yeah, of course. You take Juan Soto off of it. Yeah. But like, here's the first thing. They can't win the PR battle now, right?
Yeah, there I don't know what that
no
looks like. I guess Sasaki.
Sasaki.
Rogie?
Sure.
Yeah, and but Burns. And then, yeah, yeah. No, I agree.
No, but no. Yeah. But like, yeah, but no.
I agree.
There's what the hype for the season could have been, that's gone. right? And so in my mind, you're almost like, okay, fan sentiment in Yankee world seems to have this fourth wall dynamic where it's always in the room, right? When Aaron Boone's doing the press, they're like, Yankees fans think this, so what do you think, right? And I do think that that is important, that it is relevant, because there are so many of them and they pay for the thing. Like, I get it, right? But if I'm the Yankees now, I almost ignore that because you've already lost it. And so just build the team for 2025 as best as you can. And if that doesn't mean going bonkers on Corbin Burns or Christian Walker, and it means trading for someone else, and you think that's going to make the team better, like, go cook Cashman, because you've lost the PR battle. So, yep. Like,
yeah, it's a good point.
Our Yankee fan producer can let us know in the chat if we're wrong or not. But, like, if the Yankees go out and sign Burns and Walker, like, yeah, they'll feel better than they would have, but they're still feeling worse than if they had kept Soto, right? Like, that's an unavoidable reality. And so,
yeah.
Like, yeah. Yeah. There's just no...
No, I mean, listen.
There's no winning the offseason now, right? You could win the World Series. That's where the winning is now, right? Yeah.
Which they will also tell you. Yankees fans will also tell you that.
So one more thing on New York baseball. This rules as someone who lives in the city. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so happy about this. Because it's just going to enhance the give a crap level of the people that I'm around. And so for ball and... in the Big Apple, this is a big plus. Very quickly, on the other teams that made offers or met with Soto, the Dodgers was never going to happen. They were going to be there if they wanted to do like a short year, big number thing like they did with Harper. It was never going to happen. Whatever.
Which, like, what does that contract even look like?
100 for two? Like, who knows, right?
No, that's nothing. It would be 150 for two. He already got $50 million AAV. It would be
no. I meant
100 that.
Per. I meant 100 per, Jordan.
Okay, 200 for two. Sure. All right. Yes.
The Blue Jays. The Blue Jays were never going to get to the supersonic figure, right? They weren't. They're run by a company on Shohei Ohtani's relevance here. The Blue Jays are willing to go to this level for Shohei Ohtani. Okay. Shohei Ohtani makes a team money in a way that Juan Soto is not going to with the advertising dollars. It's a different calculation. Right. And so for that reason, I was just kind of skeptical about the Blue Jays all along. The Red Sox, the the funniest part about the Red Sox now is not only do they not have Soto, they're not even the team that lost on Soto, right? Mm. They're behind the Yankees on that, too.
Yes.
They're second place Soto misser outers.
But, as we pointed out when we had our friend Liam Fennessy on recently, there's a version of the offseason where we don't say the Red Sox on the Juan Soto Signs podcast. Like, I did not expect to be considering, to be looking and looking, being like, oh, the Red Sox also offered, you know, over $700 million, right? And I think that does speak in a similar sense to about the Yankees, except even more so to a degree, because it felt even less likely than the Yankees retaining Soto. If you're willing to spend that, and you're a worse roster at the start of the offseason than the Yankees and the Mets, whatever, then you got some work to do, right? Let's see it. You know, we've already seen a couple smaller moves so far, but let's go. Like, let's just keep on what does that look like? How much are you actually willing to spend to get back up to the level? Because for them, it's going to take even more work in theory than it will for the Yankees. But that's why I still find them super compelling, because this kind of pursuit, this serious pursuit, does show us that they should remain very relevant this winter in a way that we also weren't necessarily expecting.
It's very easy to dunk on the Red Sox and laugh at the "we tried" of it all.
Oh yeah,
but 15-700, I mean, heck of an effort. You know?
Yeah, it's funny that you said, "Hey, the Red Sox are going to offer Juan Soto $700 million, and it's not even going to be really close enough." Like, imagine telling someone that a month ago. But that's where we are, and that is why we are just kind of going through this here. It's really, really processing it.
And again, Soto could opt out and sign with the Nats on a team-friendly hometown discount in five years.
Which, to that point, okay. Let's everyone go back and delete your tweets about how stupid Juan Soto was for rejecting 440 over 50. He gets. I mean, listen, that's why you do it. I will say one other Soto thing, and then we can take a break. We have 100 million other Soto things. What am I talking about? Juan Soto's year in New York, the Bronx part of New York. I can't do this off the top of my head. I am curious where that will rank in just like, I don't know what other examples there are of like 1 year baseball, like players that were on a team for one season that was like historically significant.
Yeah.
I mean, like a super lazy, easy one that probably isn't that high on the list is Sabathia with the Brewers, right? That's one that's
But that
like,
was half a season.
And that was half a season. But whatever, I'm still putting it. But like, I'm curious now where that will just be in like when we're looking at his BRF page in 30 years, right? Like, I don't know other examples of that in baseball history. I'd love to know. I mean, I'm sure there's some obvious ones. I'm not coming up to it right now. But that just stands out as a particularly compelling thing. You know, Juan Soto that season in New York with Aaron Judge for that 1 year, you know, hitting that homer to send him to the World Series. And then he's a Met. So I just love it. It's again, it's an amazing career. The fact that he's 26 and we have so much to look forward to with him and to see what is next. He's already accomplished basically everything there is to accomplish. He hasn't won an MVP yet. So maybe that'll happen in Queens. But yeah, man. All right. Jake, should we take another break? I think we can do that. And when we return,
man,
we will talk about some other players who signed for, I'm pretty sure if you combine all these contracts, we're still not even remotely getting close to like what Juan Soto is going to make over the next 3 years or whatever. But we are going to hit some of those other moves when we return here on Baseball Barbercast from Dallas.
And welcome back to the end of Baseball Barbercast. A little bit more Juan Soto stuff, and then we will talk about some other moves. Let's boot up the Scobo, the Scott Boris score board. I would propose that this is two separate wins for Scott Boris. I would say that we have to give Scott Boris a retrospective W for declining the Washington Nationals 15-year, $440 million contract offer. An offer that at the time, people laughed at Juan Soto and Scott Boris for declining. I think the retrospective decision to do that deserves a win on the scoreboard. What do you think?
I mean, yeah. It's obviously, I mean, I think it wasn't, I mean, at the time it was like, but then it kind of went down in San Diego and then you were like, everyone's like, ha ha, you blew it, right? Because of how the second half in San Diego went. But no, I mean, it's obviously a win.
I'm going to retract my offer because it's not this offseason. That was not a decision
We, again, we're trying to keep it current. We're trying to keep it current. Did he still win this, though?
Did he win this contract? Did Scott Boris win the $765 million deal?
yeah. I think we would have said yes if it was $675 too.
The largest win in Premier League history, it was a 9-0 Leicester City drubbing against Southampton in 2018 on the road at the St. Mary's, which is relevant to this, because it feels almost like Boris went on the road here by taking Soto to Queens.
Interesting.
This is a win. It is an enormous win. It is just one win. We are going to fill out the rest of the scoreboard later in the week once we leave the winter meetings and we can just digest all of these because we had Conforto. We had
Tyler O'Neill.
Like, yeah. We're going to have a bunch. We're going to wait for the rest of those. This is one win. Moving Scott Boris to 9-5-2.
Congratulations. I'm sure he's very focused on that. Jake, let's get to some other transactions.
Sure.
We don't spend quite as much time on these, but these are some big moves. So let's talk about them. In no particular order, let us begin with the largest other contract that has been signed since we last spoke, and that is Willy Adames, shortstop. Will stay a shortstop with the San Francisco Giants. Oh, he's willing to play second. Oh, he'll move to play third for the right situation. No, the Giants desperately needed a shortstop, and they land Mr. Willy Adames for 7 years, $182 million. Let's talk about Willy Adames, the player. This is someone who is, again, he benefited this winter because he was not one of the shortstops the way that Dansby Swanson was a few years back when he had the plus glove and plus power and shortstop and leadership and all these things. Willy Adames was the guy. He was the shortstop. If you wanted a shortstop, that was the guy you were going to have to pay. And that is the contract that he ends up getting, which I think is awesome because Willy is a delight. And I was remembering when we interviewed him in Montgomery, Alabama, and he was telling us about how he was teaching his teammates Spanish, and he just seemed like a delightful young guy. And I was like, man, what a cool guy. I hope he goes on to have a nice career. Well, here he is,
nice career.
signing a $182 million contract. And of course, the first thing I know you wrote about this, and a lot of people pointing, oh, the Giants, finally, someone takes the Giants' money. Let's not forget, the Giants spent a lot of money last winter. They've been trying to give someone the mega contract, though, right? And let's also be clear, Carlos Correa did agree to take the money. That did happen. Let's not forget that was also agreed upon, and then the Giants decided otherwise. So I think the narrative about the Giants not being able to get guys is a little bit overblown, just because it's the biggest ones that they've tried to chase and haven't come close with, whether it was Judge, whether it was Ohtani, whether it was trying to trade for Stanton. These are some big misses for sure. But I also think that they've still managed to spend a lot of money. And the bigger issue is that they have not been good. That they have spent a lot of money. They've tried to spend money. And they have ended up, since 2021, one of the most ridiculous outlier seasons we've really ever seen ever in baseball, have been nothing. They have been mediocre. And that by itself is disappointing, because the Giants, as Buster Posey have repeatedly talked about since he took over as the Buster Posey, is the Giants should matter. The Giants should be relevant. And this is a move that signals that they are trying to be more relevant.
I don't love this move.
Sorry, Buster. Jake doesn't love the move.
I love Willy Adames, and I think he's a really good player.
Yeah.
This team needed a monster. And I don't think Willy Adames is that player. Now, I think the Giants are going to try to up the culture of the team and play crisper baseball and hope that that alteration of the direction leads to more wins. I don't know if Willy Adames moves the needle enough for them to finish higher than third place in the NL West. Now, maybe that does give them a playoff spot. They cannot stop here. That is the thing. If they go out and get Corbin Burns, then I like the Adames move more, because you're pushing the needle more towards relevance. Just Burns or just Adames doesn't do that. The two of them together does. And yeah. So I give this kind of an incomplete grade, but I just still look at their lineup and I'm like, it's a lot of swing and miss between him and Chapman. And I just don't. I'm happy that they got Willy Adames on their baseball team. Right?
Yeah.
But I don't. This is not the move that they have been trying to do. Right.
Sure.
This is not Correa or Ohtani or Stanton or Judge. It's not that.
Yeah.
It's relevant and it's meaningful, but it just is important to understand it's not that.
Yeah. And I think of her going, the multiple things can be true. Like, this is why I push back a little bit. Why I like it, they needed a shortstop and they got the best shortstop. You can't say that's a bad thing, right? But I'm totally with you that in the same way that I felt last year when they spent a ton of money and added some good players, several of which were very good for them, Chapman, who they managed to keep, right? Jung-Hoo Lee, like, that's an incomplete grade because he got injured. Like, they gave him a ton of money. They gave Jordan Hicks. That experiment didn't really work, but they still have him and maybe he can be helpful. And You know, Snell was awesome, but it was too late. By the time he was good, they weren't really in it. But the problem, they're just so far behind. But I still put it as it's not a reason to not try and go out and get the guy, right? And so especially if they can go get Burns, yeah, I agree, you're getting closer to that. I guess I'm just between, like, when we say it's a good move, or when I say it's a good move, it's because, yeah, it's a good move. Just because it's a good move doesn't mean it's enough. I can still think it's a good move, right? But that's where the Giants are. And that speaks to not just them. It speaks to the competition. It speaks to the Padres rosters and the star power that the Padres have. And obviously what the Dodgers have, let alone, you know, an Arizona team that is, I mean, right now, because of how much Arizona lost, like, I think you could argue that San Francisco's right there with Arizona. Maybe that's disrespectful. Yeah. But, like, I mean, I don't see those two teams, those rosters right now with a long offseason to go as that different. But San Diego, which has questions too, and then obviously the Dodgers are so far ahead. So I'm with you, but I do like it. I'm thrilled for Willie. I think it's a really cool fit. And I mean, man, Willie and Chapman is a freaking sexy left side of the infield. I mean, there's really no way around that. Like, Chapman was sneaky awesome last year, and I think keeping him is also a pretty big deal.
I think it's very easy to be like, you're trying to change the culture of a team. Winning matters here, and we don't play messy baseball. Like, every team is trying to do that at all times, right? Willy Adames and Matt Chapman on one side of the infield is walking the walk. Those are two dudes who people love to be around. Whether that leads to wins, remains to be seen. Let's fly down this list. The Oakland A's. Oh, no. I'm still not over it, dude. Oh, just the A's. Wow, that bummed me out.
I want to talk about this for an hour. We're obviously not going to. This is an amazing situation, right? Now, the first thing that I want to say about...
I didn't even announce the deal.
The A's signed Luis... It feels like it happened a week ago. So it's like it feels so long ago that it's... But tell us, what happened here?
The A's...
Maybe people are finding out for the first time.
3 years, $67 million to Luis Severino, the largest contract in franchise history.
Yes. The A's do have money. What a surprise.
Where was it?
There is an element of this.
It was in the other pair of John Fisher's Gap jeans.
Let's talk about the team perspective first. There is an element of this that is insulting. But also, it's a very important reminder that all these teams, okay, maybe I can say realistically that not every team can afford Juan Soto. I feel very comfortable saying that that is probably the case. And that's okay. I know we want to say that. It's fine. Not every team can afford Juan Soto. That's fine. But this right here is a great reminder that if your team wants to give a good pitcher $20 million, they can do it. They're choosing not to. And so the timing of this is brutal, but it's also not that surprising. Jeff Passan wrote this earlier this offseason, and I was like, what? And I tweeted out the screen cap of this section because we didn't end up talking about it at the time, and it didn't really create a lot of buzz when he wrote it, but I was like, what? Jeff wrote earlier this offseason that the A's were planning on increasing payroll dramatically up to near $100 million. Now, they started the offseason with the lowest payroll in baseball, around a projected $30 or $40 million because of, obviously, again, it's the A's. They have no one making guaranteed money, and all their guys are pre-arb and all those things, right? To get to $100 million, I mean, that would require another couple of contracts close to what Severino is getting. But it's a reminder they can't do it. And if they felt like they had to do it to feel like they were showing the other owners, yes, we will spend now that we are out of Oakland. Again, this is horribly insulting and disappointing and frustrating and all those things, obviously. But the money's there if they want to spend it. Now, let's talk about Luis Severino. Because then you have people being like, oh, I feel so bad for why would he choose to go play in a minor league park? Listen, do not feel bad for Luis Severino. He made this choice. And that's fine. That's good. Good for him. He's going to go make $22 million a year for the next 3 years, or maybe 2 years if he wants to opt out. And he's going to be just fine. He understands what he's signing up for. And like again, nobody forced him to do this. And he's still going to be a Major League Baseball player. And that's going to be okay. And so I'm happy. I'm excited for him. I think it's awesome. There's part of me that's like, cool. Like, Luis Severino is going to go lead this A's staff, this team that sneaky did not stink for the second half of last season and are going to try and compete for something. There's so many things that are icky around it. And I feel bad. Like, I'm going to have such a tough time like celebrating this franchise. Like I that's going to be a hard thing to do, but I want to be happy for the players. I want to be happy that for Brent Rooker, that Brent Rooker and Lawrence Butler now have a pitcher that is not like well below replacement level, which was essentially their entire starting rotation. Like I'm happy for the players of the team. Yeah. So I don't know. It brings a lot of strange feelings about this. And I'm curious how non-A's fans are feeling about this. And I'm also curious how A's fans are feeling about this for those that are choosing to stick with this team if they exist.
That's the thing. What A's fans? Yeah. Who this be?
Yeah.
Right? Las Vegans?
Yeah.
Maybe? When they get there? But are they like, people like rolling with these people now? Like
Luis Severino's not going to be pitching in Vegas. I mean, maybe.
But that's the thing. So like if you live in Las Vegas and you're amped about the A's, are you amped about Luis Severino, a player you're never going to get to see? Like it doesn't. I'm just confused. I feel. My biggest feeling is I feel really bad for A's fans in Oakland who were told one thing for so long and then had the rut. And obviously it was a lie. It was a lie all along. It was a ruse all along. I'm happy for Luis Severino. Let's keep rolling forward.
Yeah.
I want to do Guardians Shane Bieber because this one kind of went under the radar. Shane Bieber, if he comes back, is going to maybe get Cy Young votes. Pretty good pitcher.
Right. I mean, when he comes back in 2025 is a huge X factor. I think whether that's April, end of April or end of June is a pretty big deal for how likely it is that he pitches enough to want to opt out of this deal. This is a 2-year, $26 million deal if he picks up the player option for 2026. But if Shane Bieber comes back looking like he did in the few starts in spring before he went down, I mean, there's no way he's not opting out of that contract. I mean, there's just no way because at that point, he's still going to be a relatively young free agent starter who's shown that he's healthy, who's shown that he can be one of the better pitchers in the American League. But this is still a massive win. I mean, for Cleveland to be able to keep him, to get even maybe 100 more innings out of this guy for a team that so desperately needs starting pitching right now, we don't know. There's still a mystery element to this. There's still an unknown. But obviously, it's cool that Bieber, comfortable still in the middle of his rehab, was not going to pick, not that we haven't seen guys leave in the middle of rehab and sign elsewhere, but to stick with this team, for him to have to watch what that team did without him, you know, last year, and be able to come back and help this rotation, I have to imagine factored into his willingness to take this, because I'll be honest, I thought he was going to get way more than this. And it sounds like he was getting offers that were larger than this, but I really thought that there were going to be some other teams like the Orioles, like the Dodgers, like who knows, right? That were just going to be like, here, we'll guarantee you $40 million for here's your 2-year deal. And you could still opt out if you want. I thought we were going to see something like that. Maybe he had those offers and he just chose to stick with Cleveland and decide to maybe cash in more next winter, which I think is totally reasonable. And I hope, I think that could work out really well for both player and team.
Mets, Clay Holmes, 3 years, $38 million. Very odd, very hilarious. They're going to try him as a starter.
Mm-hmm.
The Mets' moves on the pitching side so far are them just saying, we believe in our pitching development people at the major league level to turn players you don't think are good starters into good starters. They did it last year and they think they can do it again, right? Turning Quintana into something usable and pretty dominant, turning Minaya into an ace down the stretch and helping Severino rediscover himself, right? And I think the Mets think they can do that again. And if they think they can do that again, then this is a bargain for a starter. And if they don't succeed, it's a totally fine deal for a reliever who is better than people think.
Yeah, and I think for Holmes, again, we've seen this trend now, and it'll be curious if we see another one if some team tries to do this with Jeff Hoffman, right? But we saw Lugo do this extremely successfully. We saw Reynaldo Lopez do this successfully, although obviously he dealt with some injuries at the end. And then Jordan Hicks, it didn't work, right? He finished the Giants season in the bullpen, and it doesn't seem like he's really in the mix to start anymore moving forward. So it's an interesting backup plan. I mean, is it that simple to just be like, worst comes to worst, he just goes back and is an awesome reliever? It's probably going to be some amount of transition no matter what, but at the very least, it makes Clay Holmes' season a lot more interesting next year, right? Because they could have just been like, okay, cool, come be our eighth inning guy, and I would have been like, yep, that makes sense, and then I wouldn't have thought twice about it because it would have just checked a lot of boxes of exactly what you would expect a free agent fit to get and to be and what team and all those things. if he's going to be a starter, that is interesting. And I think it's also interesting because they probably still need more starting pitching. And so if they're actually deciding like, yes, Clay Holmes is absolutely 100% one of our five starters, I don't believe that they are actually doing that. I think that they're going to still be active pursuing more starting pitching because there's no way this can be plan A, even if they think it could work.
I would like to save the rest of these for later in the week. Tyler O'Neill, Gary Sanchez, Danny Jansen, Michael Conforto. Because I want to go right about Juan Soto. And I want to think about Juan Soto. And I want to remind everybody that was bonkers.
We have one more detail, contract detail to end on. This is from Ken Rosenthal, also from Jorge Castillo. You know Jorge Castillo, right? He's pretty good. How about this detail? Mets can void Soto's opt-out after 5 years by escalating his average AAV from 51 to 55 over the last 10 years. So just to be clear, that's just like an additional $40 million, I guess, that would get it to $800 million, to be clear. Like in that scenario, if they void it, we're putting in, now we're at, you know, 15,800. And five, I think, if I'm doing my math correctly.
Does Soto buy an island?
Why not? What are you waiting for, bud? So that $75 million signing bonus should be in your account shortly. All right, that's it. Juan Soto, congratulations. New York Mets fans, congratulations. New York Yankees fans, you're going to be okay. Thank you. Speaking of New York Yankees fans, producer Andrew Hartz, thank you for producing this podcast.
Yikes.
Listening to us talk about the Yankees playing second fiddle to the New York Mets. We appreciate it. Thank you, Jake Mintz, for doing this podcast with me. We're going to go right about Juan Soto, and then the winter meetings are starting. We have a lot of stuff that's going to happen this week. I'm sure there's going to be far more than Michael Conforto that we're going to be talking about the next time we get on these microphones, but I'm looking forward to it. So thank you all for listening. Thank you, Juan Soto, for signing right before I got on this here podcast. You can email us at baseballbarbiecast@gmail.com, and we will talk to you all very, very soon.